When my boyfriend Aaron asked me out to dinner a few nights ago, I assumed we'd go to a real restaurant. But when he pulled up into the Burger King parking lot, my hopes were dashed. In hindsight, I shouldn't have been surprised. Aaron usually made me pay for everything, so it made sense that the one time he offered to treat me to dinner, we'd end up being at some fast food place just a few blocks from our house. Still, I wasn't complaining. I loved burgers, and I loved Aaron even more. Any time spent with him would be fine with me. As soon as we got our food, though, I noticed something was up. He wouldn't look me directly in the eyes. He kept staring out the windows and fumbling with his food. I started to worry that he was going to deliver some bad news. And then he said the five words I'd been dreading. "Joe, we need to talk." My heart sank. He was going to break up with me. On the one hand, I was shocked by this. I thought we were happy together. I thought we had a good life. On the other hand, I understood some of his problems. Aaron was chronically unemployed. He could never hold a job for longer than a couple of weeks, while I was making more than enough money for the both of us. I always told him that I didn't have a problem with this arrangement, but maybe he did. He struggled to speak. So I told him to just be blunt. Tell me the truth. His answer was something I did not expect. "I'm in trouble," he said. "People are after me." "What?" I asked him. He still didn't look at me. He stared out the window at the cars whizzing by. He explained that he'd been taking out loans. He'd been gambling. He owed a lot of money to some very shady people. And when he told them that he needed extra time to pay them back, they said they were going to come after him. "So what does that mean?" I asked him. He choked on his burger. It means," he said, "that I'm in danger and I need your help." Now, my first instinct was to scream at him for being so stupid. How could he get mixed up in something like that? How could he keep all this from me? But his expression seemed so sad, so broken, that I couldn't stay mad at him. I can help," I said. "How much do you need?" He breathed deeply. 5,000," he said. "And I sort of need you to deal with these guys. I've only ever talked with them online, and I kind of pretended to be you when I did. I used your photo." I was speechless. Not only had Aaron gotten mixed up in illegal gambling, but he'd used me as a cover? I'd lived with him for 3 years now. I had no idea that he'd be capable of such a betrayal. Before I could say anything, Aaron saw something through the window and he jerked back in horror. A black van had just parked outside and three large men got out. They lumbered toward the front door. I knew right away that those were the men Aaron had been afraid of. They each held crowbars. The rest of the Burger King was completely empty. Even the girl at the front counter had gone into the kitchen. It was just the two of us as those men rushed inside. They looked around and recognized me right away, probably from the photo Aaron had used. It's okay," he told me. "They just want to break a kneecap. Just let them do it. You can even pick which one. After that, you can pay them." His voice was shaky and scared, but he didn't sound guilty for what he was asking me to do. Two of the men walked toward me, while the third stepped behind the counter to deal with the worker in the back. The two men wore grave expressions, intimidating, but also apathetic, as if they were just doing their jobs. "Joseph Carter," one of them said. "That's my name." I had two choices. I could either admit who I was and accept the intense, horrifying pain of a shattered knee, or I could stand up and try to fight against two thugs who were each twice my size. Aaron watched me, expecting me to take the punishment. He knew that I wasn't strong enough to defend myself. He knew that I was too weak and scared to fight back. And usually, I would have been. But right then, I was powered by the anger of this betrayal and the fear of getting maimed. I pushed myself out of the booth and stared them both down. "I'm Joseph," I said. They nodded at each other. One rushed to my side and grabbed my shoulders.
The other started tapping his crowbar against his palm. The one who held me whispered in my ear,
"Hold still. This won't take long."
That was when I acted. I twisted out of his grip and kneed him in the groin. As he keeled over, I pulled the crowbar out of his hand and raced across the restaurant. I shielded myself behind the table, swinging the crowbar in front of me. If they were going to come at me, I'd put up a fight. At first, the two men were too surprised to move. Then, they started coming at me from either side. I couldn't take them both on at once, so I needed to think of something fast.
"Wait!"
I said. They both stopped. By then, the third man had come back out of the kitchen and joined the others.
"We knew you were coming," one of them said. "You said you'd take your punishment."
My mind whirled with possible explanations. For a long, horrible moment, I couldn't think of anything to say. These men meant business, and there was nothing I could do to change their minds. Then I thought of something. The only way to save myself was to give up. "Okay," I said. "Do whatever you want to me. But leave my boyfriend alone." I pointed towards Aaron, who was still sitting in the booth watching the drama unfold. "I love this man more than anything, and if you hurt him instead of me, I don't think I could survive that. He's the light of my life, the reason I wake up in the morning. So if you go after him in any way, it would punish me so much more than any pain you could inflict on my own body. Do you understand?" I really laid it on thick, forcing tears out of my eyes and gesturing wildly at Aaron. I waited for a long moment, scared that my plan wasn't going to work. But then the three men started smiling. They turned away and started approaching Aaron. As he screamed, they each dove at him. I could have left in the moment, but I wanted to see the carnage. It all happened so fast, less than a minute. But they left Aaron a bloody, semi-conscious mess. His kneecaps were both shattered, and several other bones were broken. As Aaron whimpered from the booth, one of the men turned towards me.
"You shouldn't have brought your boyfriend here."
"Nah," I agreed. "I shouldn't have. Now let's go to the ATM and get your money." The day Perry, my closest friend, asked if I knew Death's Play on Twitter, I should have shut him up, looked away, and never talked about it again. Although I did shut him up and looked away, like a fool, I asked him about it later that day. I wasn't much of a Twitter user because I thought that only loners use the app. I didn't like the energy, the competition, the viciousness, and other things that ensued on the app, so I stayed away from it. But Perry, he loved the app so much, I was tempted sometimes. He spent hours surfing through the app, looking for threads and narrating them all to me whenever he had time to spare. I thought Death's Play, or whatever he called it, was just like one of his little discoveries. Curiosity finally got the best of me, and I told him to tell me what he meant by it. I didn't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't exactly what he said. He was quickly elated to tell me all about the new account, Death's Play. The account played out just like its name. No one knew the handler or who was behind the hosts, but everyone had a good time reading thread after thread of funny ways that some people lost their lives. Death's Play, indeed. It sounded surreal, and it didn't exactly pass as something a sane person was supposed to read, but the idea of the account ignited butterflies in my stomach. When Perry told me to download the Twitter app, I did so without any second thoughts. I registered on the app, created a weird username, and followed the account Perry introduced to me. I didn't follow any other account, even Perry's, because it didn't take long before I got engrossed in the stories. The more I read, the darker they were, and the more excited I was. I got to meet many more people like myself, people that love the idea of funny deaths. They started to make suggestions in the comment boxes. Or there were already many suggestions before I joined. One suggested that the account owner write a story about someone who died by lighting a fire on his toes. Another person suggested that the account owner write about someone who drowned in toilet water. The comments and suggestions were as funny as the stories. I couldn't help but be thankful to Perry in my heart for introducing me to the account. We were indeed birds of the same feather. Our likes were the common ground that brought us together. Life took a new turn, and I took pleasure in using the app every day. Would have been hard to convince anyone that I didn't use Twitter before that time. Sometime later, Perry and I also added our suggestions in one of the comment sections of a particular thread. Perry suggested that the owner write a thread about someone who vomited to death. Sounded gross, but the idea caused a sort of adrenaline to rush through me in expectation. It wasn't long before I made my suggestion and asked the man to write a story about someone who closed the door of the elevator on his hand and rode to his death. I knew it sounded cruel, but it didn't mean that the owner of Death's Play couldn't make something funny out of it. Perry and I earnestly waited for the day that our suggestions would make it to the threads. 2 weeks later, Perry and I prayed hard that our suggestions would never make it. We deleted comments and unfollowed the account. Our decision stemmed from some news that we saw. The threads on Death's Play were no comedy or a way of relieving pain. They were actual ways that some people died. Now, it would have been okay if those deaths were random, but they weren't. The ones who suffered the deaths we read were the people who made the suggestion. The first news came on the television where we heard that some man drowned himself to death in the toilet. That seemed casual, but when we listened to the full story and noticed that it matched exactly with the thread we read a few days before, we knew something was wrong. We tried to search for the thread and the person who suggested it. We were not surprised, but still horrified that his family members had tagged his account as dead. He was the same person that died by drowning. We made further findings and began to match all the deaths on Death's Plays threads to the deaths of the ones who made the suggestions. They were all alike. Fear gripped me, and I knew it was the same with Perry. That was when we deleted our comments and unfollowed the account. Sadly, it wasn't enough. Perry died a week later. The death of Perry scared me, and I almost thought I would die from the sight I saw. Earlier that day, I left the house to get some supplies for the week. Since we didn't have a Twitter account to keep us busy anymore, we had to find actual work and actual fun. And that included cooking. I went to the mall to get some vegetables. I tried as much as possible not to stay out too late, but that didn't matter. When I got back home, Perry was lying in a pool of vomit. I called the ambulance and they came for him, but there was nothing they could do. I lost my friend. Anger and fear surged through me at the announcement, and I found myself in Death's Play account once again. I read the thread that the owner wrote on Perry's suggestion and knew without a doubt that the man, or whoever it was, killed the victims himself. I wondered about what to do. To expose the man on the internet or report him? Whatever I did, I avoided elevators at all costs. After Perry's burial, I decided the best thing to do was report the man to the right authorities to get him arrested. Otherwise, death would come for me, too. I went to the police station, submitted my report, and showed them evidence. They took my report into account, and when they asked me to be their bait, I agreed. If it meant avenging my best friend's death, I was willing to risk my life. The opportunity to take the elevator came one day. I was in a hotel lobby and I had to reach the 10th floor where I had a meeting with a guy I met on a dating app. Unsurprisingly, one of the staff in the lobby motioned me towards the lift. My guts told me it was the killer himself. I took the elevator that he suggested and the man boarded after me. Thankfully, I had informed the detectives beforehand. The elevator stopped and opened on the first floor, and the two officers swarmed in and arrested the guy. That's how I was rescued from the hands of death. The truth of Death's Play came to life, as well as the lives that were lost due to his silly game and the urge to garner influence. I sometimes wish I'd planned all this before Perry died.
There was something strange about the man who sauntered into the Burger King in a long trench coat, which he shivered under. He was very tall, hunched over at the shoulders, and from the network of veins on the back of his hands, I could tell he was very lean. He had long, thin hair, and the frizzies fell on his face loosely, those sunken cheeks that gave him an unmistakable sober appearance. The weather was mostly warm, and from where I was seated, dining in my burger and soda, I can make out the strangeness of his quivering, because I would not assume he was so frail to be incapable of supporting his own weight. I swallowed that chewed piece of food I had in my mouth as I watched him. I had no other form of entertainment for my time, and found him rather curious. He ambled to a seat and sat with both his hands on the table. The bleached skin of his face had a slight pink discoloration around his nose and mouth. His eyes were a dizzying gray pair, which stared blankly and did not roam like a conscious mind would. I was still intrigued by this man when his mouth began to move and my fascination deepened. It was something to behold. I reached over to my soda and slurped some to wash down the taste of food in my mouth. In that small moment that I peeled my gaze away from him, he was up on his feet. His movement was steady, almost as though he tried a stiff control of his core. The rigid motion, one step at a time, gave him an unnatural gait that made it slower for him to reach the counter. "Hello, what's your order?" The round-faced blonde girl behind the counter said with the same insincere hospitality that most workers have. The man turned away from me and faced the counter so I could not make out the interaction of their discussion as much as I tried to eavesdrop. But then, the girl looked in my direction and then back at the man. I wondered what it was about me that they discussed, so I looked away to avoid an awkward situation. I had been eating my food for the past 30 minutes already, and since I was the only one there the entire time, I might as well have stayed too long. "I'm sorry, sir. I can't make a word of what you were saying," the girl hinted, the insincerity of her smiling face fading in frustration. "Could you perhaps speak louder?" Yet there were no words from the man which I could hear. It was at this moment that I sensed things begin to go awry. The food which I had swallowed curled through the tube of my throat but refused to go any deeper. My senses were alert to the situation at the counter, but I feigned disinterest as I concerned myself with my food. My ears pricked, and I could hear the rustling of a paper bag in her hands, and not much else. "Would you like someone to help you? I don't speak sign language, I'm sorry." She spoke louder. I sensed an avoidable situation and thought it was wise to say something to help them. "Sir, do you need any help?" I said from where I sat. The man turned to me, and I was utterly mesmerized by his eyes. The strength of his glare fixated on me rendered his appearance in a different light to me. He opened his mouth and muttered something quiet. I scowled as my stomach hardened at the thought of this strange man. "Could you speak out?" I said, perplexed by his behavior. Then I turned to the girl at the counter. "Perhaps help him with something to eat. I'll fix it." The girl looked at me as though I had just spoken in a strange language. "What does he want?" she asked, after her temporary delay. "Sir, can you..." I was talking when the man interrupted me by shoving his hands into his coat to produce a steel cleaver with a shaped handle with wings at the tip. His eyes turned wild, and I could sense panic when he held the cleaver up. He regarded me briefly and suddenly at her. Then he set himself sideways between us so that he backed away slowly from our midst. "You found me here?" the man spoke. Sheer terror seized me, and I immediately turned numb in my seat. I broke into a small sweat as I reconciled the full implication of this man gone berserk with a large cleaver in his hands. He wielded it expertly, like one who had done so many times, and his disposition was of one who would waste no time to do it again. "Why do you persecute me?" he cried furiously. "You demons! I have escaped you all day, and now you would not allow me respite." He was still speaking when he suddenly burst into motion, springing towards the counter. The girl shrieked with fear at his charge, but moved too late. As did I, instinctively to her rescue. His blitz was unbelievable, even for a cop like myself who had seen such criminally swift people. He jumped behind the counter with ease and lifted his hand with the cleaver in it. Hell froze over, and the anomaly bubbled up into the earth. I drew my gun from my hip as he took his first swing at her. She lifted her hands to defend herself, and the cleaver came down on her with a chomp. Her cry was the most unnatural noise I had ever heard in a human. From him, it was a hysterical shriek of glee. I saw a man fully committed to his frenzy, and I knew what genuine fear was in that moment. I'd wanted nothing more than to have him arrested and take him in as I moved in with my gun pointed straight at him. "You have found me, and now, like the others, you have met your end." he said, as he plucked the cleaver from her arm to take another swing. The second swing was a yell to end a short, yawning pause. I was shaken by the depravity, and I lost my cool as I watched him go about butchering her as though she were a mere rag. Twice, he swung in a matter of seconds, and I had had enough. I released the safety of my pistol and pulled the trigger. The gun banged, and with one bullet to the base of his skull, the terror ended. He crashed on his side and was covered strangely in his trench coat. Good heavens! I regarded the man once, and I flushed at the horror I had just witnessed. I still could not believe it myself. I turned to my phone quickly and made the call to emergency services for the girl whose name I later found out was Sarah. Sarah made a recovery in 3 months, but I still think about that evening sometimes, and I get the shivers of its horrors all over again.